very graciously willing to take a few questions. And I think the way that we were going to do this is to invite people up just to form lines on either side. We're not going to stay here all night, so we'll get a few of them. And we do have, I think, remote mics on each side. Yeah, oh yeah, there they are. So if anybody has a question for Bill, and if not, that's also fine. We've just had quite a feast there. A lot to digest.
Bill.
And by the way, feel completely free to leave. I won't be offended, and it is a gorgeous day out there. Far away. So you'll know that one of the things that makes me happiest about having spent my life in the Adirondacks in Vermont is that there's nothing valuable underneath the soil in either place, which is really the only way to live anymore, because you're in desperate trouble the minute someone finds something worth something down below. So you know about this Marcellus Shale, and you know that people are eager to go exploring for it. When people first announced that they'd found a lot of natural gas all over the East, there was a certain amount among environmentalists, a certain amount of hope in that, because natural gas only emits about half as much carbon when you burn it as coal does. And so people kept saying, oh, this might be our kind of bridge to the future and this kind of thing. But as always, things turn out to be more complicated. So the first thing to know about fracking, of course, is that it's not much fun where it's taking place. And we're beginning to understand just the toll it takes on water and things. I just spent some time with journalists who've been covering down in West Virginia the death of entire streams from leaks of this briny, well fluid into the streams and rivers. There's a bigger problem too, it turns out. The process of fracking, breaking apart the rock so that the methane escapes more easily, allows methane to escape not only into the wellhead, but also into the air. And there was a study at Cornell that came out a few months ago saying that because that unburned methane, CH4, is a more potent greenhouse gas even than carbon dioxide, though it exists at much lower concentrations, it was quite possible that fracked gas was no better, maybe even worse than coal. So it isn't really a bridge to the future. It's kind of a rickety pier under which we'll, stumble a little farther out into the lake that we're about to jump into. Time really not for bridges to the future. Time to gather ourselves and finally make the sort of leap that we're going to have to make towards renewable energy. It's not going to be easy. Anybody who just thinks that you'll just take the huge American machine, rip out the internal combustion engine, toss in a windmill, and carry on as before is fooling themselves. This is going to be the biggest and most wrenching and difficult change that human beings have ever gone through. But we better do it, because it's nothing compared to the big wrenching change we're going to go through if we don't do it. Fracking, I'm afraid, just turns out to be one more way that we're going to try and delay that which we need to do. And delay at this point is probably the worst thing that we can do. Johnny, do you have a...
Hello, Bill. Thanks so much. Of course, this was a great...
Thank you for having me here.
No. Thank you. It was totally an honor. A couple of things. I'd like you to sort of breezed past this, but one of the major issues in our American lifestyle that we have a right to defend at whatever cost to the rest of the planet is predicated on liquid fuel. Mm. So I wish that you would talk about that a little bit. And also, I just interviewed Harvey Wasserman, and there was a reference to you being a proponent for small nuclear. So if you could touch on that, that would also be great.
I don't think there's, I think for once I'm not guilty of whatever I don't think I've ever said a word about for nuclear power turns out to be, I mean it's a, of course it's an interesting question because...
Well, I don't think people understand what small nuclear
means. Well, I mean,
means.
Just nuclear in general, I don't really understand, I don't really know what small nuclear means either.
Okay.
But nuclear power in general, I mean, look, 25 years ago, the scariest thing you could imagine was a nuclear power plant melting down, because when it does, as we saw in Japan, it causes big problems. That's not the scariest thing we can imagine anymore. You operate a coal plant according to spec, and it destroys the plant. Nothing has to go wrong, okay? So coal plants here, but there's no reason to think that nuclear power is going to play much of a role in the future that we need, mostly because not only is it still dangerous, it's also ruinously expensive. And nobody does it unless they get a huge chunk of money from the government. And if the government's going to be in the business of giving out huge chunks of money, it's clear that you get more kilowatt hours for the buck if you're building some wind. And not necessarily always building them on the biggest scale. I saw the figures the other day on, you know, with solar, not solar photovoltaics, but solar hot water heaters. People here maybe have traveled to Israel or the Mediterranean. You often see them. Israel gets about 90% of its hot water from solar panels. The Chinese have put up so many of these things that they're the equivalent. They're about 250 million Chinese when they take a shower. The hot water is coming off solar panels on the roof. It's the equivalent of about 40 nuclear power plants worth of hot water that they've got just on individual hot water units on the roof. And they're a complete no-brainer. Even at this latitude, they pay you back in 3 or 4 years. And you can take showers as long as you want without having to feel the slightest bit guilty once you put them up. Here's the kicker to that story, and it sort of gets at this political question. And I'm thinking about it today because something happened today to remind me. Jimmy Carter put those solar panels on the White House roof in 1979. This day in 1979, 32 years ago today, Ronald Reagan took them down in 1986 because he wanted manlier forms of energy, you know? And and last year, we hoped that the Obama administration might put them up, so we did this big campaign and we found one of the old Carter panels on the roof of a college in Maine where it was still working fine. And we took it down to the, we had these rallies in Boston and New York and Washington. We got to the White House and the White House was not into it for whatever reason, okay? We couldn't get them to hardly even meet with us or commit to anything. But to their great credit, because we demonstrated with, you know, 100,000 signatures on a petition and things, that there was, 2 weeks later, they said, okay, we'll put it up. In fact, Stephen Chu, the Secretary of Energy, had a big press conference, and he said, by next spring, the solar panels will be on the roof. Well, sadly, spring ended about 5 hours ago. And there, in fact, are no solar panels on the roof of the White House yet, and we still can't quite get an explanation why not, but it's simply a reminder of the fact that we need to push politically. Even our friends, we need to push because this stuff's hard and they don't do it just because you ask once nicely. Let me add an addendum to that story. I was in China doing a story for National Geographic last year on China and energy. And I went to spend the day with the guy who's put up more of those solar panels than anybody else, a guy named Huang Ming, who runs Heming Solar. Put up 60 million of these solar arrays across China, solar hot water arrays. And we had a good day of talking, and he said, you know, come with me, I want you to see my museum. This guy's quite wealthy, among other things, as you might expect. And so he took me to his private museum, which was kind of nutty. It had, you know, like busts of great men of history, like Voltaire and, you know, stuff. But the main object in the museum is one of those solar panels off the roof of the Carter White House. And he was like, you guys owned this technology. What the hell happened? You know. So for me, I'm far more interested in solar panels than itty-bitty nuclear reactors or anything else, because we can do them right now, and we better do them right now. You know, that's sort of my take on it.
If you could speak to replacing or whatever the other solution is for liquid fuel.
Well, yeah, okay. So, I mean, the reason we use so much liquid fuel is mostly for automobile transportation. So, one way to get rid of using it is to not have so much automobile transportation, which means buses and bicycles and trains. Those are all excellent ideas, and we should be hard at work on them. My friend Jim Kunstler always says that America has a train network of which Bulgaria would be ashamed. It's basically true. The other way to get rid, if you're going to drive, you know, clearly we need to move very quickly to small electric vehicles that we can power off solar panels on our roof. Okay, that's, you know, how hopefully we'll, and the technology's there. Detroit can make it now. In fact, you can go buy a Chevy Volt. But we just have to make it happen on a scale large enough to matter fast.
And the only other thing, I wanted to let everybody know that our Chamber of Commerce, the Columbia County Chamber of Commerce, is completely independent.
That's right.
It is not part of a national organization.
Yes, we need all those. Most of them aren't, and we need them all to just announce it.
Well,
probably.
I've been encouraging David Colby to do that. And in fact, Martin could probably speak to this better. We just launched a Bally chapter.
Oh, good.
Yep. In combination, Valley, or coordination, or under the auspices of
Business Alliance for Local Living Economy. It's a very good thing. Beautiful.
Hey, we're over here.
Oh, okay.
Would you outline for us your vision of the solution to all this? Not just the path and the way to get people's attention, but where would you like to end up?
No, I won't outline my sort of solution to everything, because I don't think there is sort of one grand vision of the solution. What we need is a trajectory. We need to be moving in the right direction instead of the wrong one. We'll find out as we go along what the ways to do that most efficiently are. Clearly, the first thing to do is put a stiff price on carbon that reflects the damage it does in the environment. Right now, ExxonMobil, their business model is, I get to use the atmosphere as an open sewer into which to dump my waste for free. As long as the for free part remains, we won't get traction. When that changes, power of markets and things will begin to help and not hurt us. We need to get information in the system. The only thing I'll say about the eventual end point, I think, is that it will be, unlike the fossil fuel world, different everywhere. We're going from highly concentrated fuels that we then spread out, you know, use the same way every place, to very diffuse energy. And there's sun and wind everywhere, but not much, not a huge amount of it. So you have to spread out a little bit. You have to build, again, localized economies and distribution systems. I think the most encouraging thing is to imagine, and here's something to sort of put in your imagination, a electric grid, say, that works more like a farmer's market than ours does at present. I have solar panels all over my roof. On a day like today, I'm a utility. I'm firing electrons down the grid. It works the way the internet works, not the way that old TV broadcasting used to work with a few centralized things. That connection is logistically important, and it's also sort of ethically important. It's the world that we're building. And if you have a farmer's market in electrons the way that you have a farmer's market in radishes and cheese, then you're making some steps down the path. We also have this great gift of being able to have a farmer's market in information now. The internet, for all its flaws, is an enormous help along this path. And one of the reasons is, as people are discovering in places like this, it allows you for the first time to be able to live a local life and also not be kind of parochial. You don't have to go out in the world and make something of yourself. You can stay close to home, live a local life, and yet be fully, you always have a window open where old prejudices can blow out and new ideas blow in, and it won't be that many years before you won't need me here in person. I'll simply appear via Skype, and they'll be No, that's, I wouldn't be able to eat the cheese if I so that would be. Let's do one more.
I had two questions, and you've already answered the first one, which was an update on the solar panels on the White House.
Yes.
My other is the day of civil disobedience set?
No, it's going to be more than a day.
Okay.
It's going to be sometime from August into September.
Huh.
And we want to do it sort of day after day, and the kind of model is what they did at the South African Embassy in the 1980s. Very, very peaceful, and I'll end by saying that one of the things that we'll say in this letter that's going out in a few days is that if we're going to do it this time, we do not want college kids to be the only participants. Okay? Those of us who spend our life pouring carbon into the atmosphere should be part of this. And, I'm reminded of my great friend, a woman some of you may have known, named Doris Haddock, Granny D, she was called, who walked across America at the age of 90 to protest all this stuff. And then a couple years later, she called me up and said, come to Washington, we're doing this protest. And I knew it was not going to be a very big deal, whatever, but I'm well-raised. If someone who's 92 tells me to do something, I do it. And off we went. And we were holding a sign that said, stop global warming, stop campaign contributions from global warmers. We held it in the rotunda of the Capitol, which is closer than they want you to actually do the whole free speech thing. And so they arrested us, and they handcuffed the two of us together, which was very funny because she was about 4'8". So, and she looked up at me, and she'd had emphysema too, which made the whole Walk Across America thing completely nuts. But she looked up, she said, you know what? I'm 93. I've never been arrested before. Should have started long ago, she said. Now, I don't know if you all need to get arrested or not. Some of you may want to, some of you may not. Doesn't matter, as long as you do something hard and powerful and meaningful, and do it sooner rather than later. Thank you all.